Welcome everybody to our class on tarot astrology. I should mention actually that the class is going to be on just a certain portion of tarot astrology. There's a good deal to it, and we're only going to be covering a little bit of it. This is going to be a three-part series, and it's going to be a series that covers some, just some, of the uses of tarot astrology and some of the root basic systems from which that astrology comes. It is probable that most of you know some of this material. It is also probable that few of you, maybe none of you, know all the things that I'm going to be mentioning to you this evening. And even if you did, the nice, neat organization of that material is probably something that is not usually available even to people who know this stuff. There's so much of it that it tends to be a little disorganized in the mind. So this is going to tend to organize that material for you. We're going to be working in three classes. The first of the classes is a class on the major arcana, the astrology of the major arcana. So if you would, take out all the cards of the major arcana from your deck and have them available. Put the rest of the deck aside. In class two, we'll be discussing the minor arcana and the astrology of the minors. And in that class, we'll be working only with the numbered cards. And in the third class, we'll be working with the court cards and just the court cards, and you can put the rest of the cards aside. So tonight we're going to be working with the majors. There are certain things that are true for all of them. We're going to go into that in a little bit. I guess maybe the best thing I could do is start by mentioning that there is a simple idea connected with astrology that is also connected with numerology and a variety of other esoteric subjects that people are not unfamiliar with but probably haven't thought to mention. There's a difference between astrology and astronomy. There's a difference between numerology and number. There's a difference between the letters of an alphabet and the meaning of those letters. The difference between those sets is essentially the difference between measure and meaning. It's the difference between what you actually see when you observe the world and how you interpret what you see. When you're dealing with number, for example, it's easy to see that the world and the nature of the world are describable in numerical terms, by number, by formula, by the laws that come from observing the actual processes of nature. And mathematics does not require meaning to work. In fact, mathematics pretty much requires that you don't use meaning. It requires that you simply observe what you see carefully and accurately, and then apply the essence of what you see in numerical terms. When you're working with numerology, you're not so much interested in measurement as you are in meaning. What do the numbers mean? And then you apply meaning to number from an observation, essentially, of yourself, your own nature, and the relationship of human nature to the universe. When you do that with astrology and astronomy, astronomy likewise is an observation of the measured nature of the universe. How big are the heavenly bodies? How far apart are they from each other? What are the mathematics that describe their movement and even their composition? And everything is a matter of measure. When you're talking about astrology, you're not interested in those things in particular, except insofar as you need measure to produce the charts that you'll be working with. But once you've got those are translated again into meaning, into the issue of what do they mean in regard to a human life? What do they mean in regard to human character, personality, and the events that drive them? So what we're going to be doing here is applying or finding what the source of meaning is for astrology and tarot, and I can tell you that the meaning of astrology and tarot has a different source than the meaning of astrology in the Western form of it. The astrology and tarot is essentially Kabbalistic. It is not Western. Kabbalah by itself, I should mention to you, is not essentially Western in its nature. And the Western tradition of astrology, you should probably know already, is pretty much based on the Greek pantheon and what Western thinking has done to that Greek pantheon. We use the names of the gods to describe the characters and qualities of the rocks in the sky, and we apply the patterns of those rocks in the sky and their Greek names and the qualities of the gods as we understand them to our own lives, our own characters, and to the events that happen in our lives and the way in which those things happen. We basically are working with personality archetypes and circumstances. Circumstances and destinies and the ordering of events. That's essentially what Western astrology does, as far as I know it. That's its main use for the moment. It may very well be that if there are astrologers in our crowd tonight, that there may be some argument about that, because I'm pretty sure that astrology originally and perhaps at its root deals with more than that. But for the most part, that's what most of us know, that's what most of us work with. When you're working with astrology and tarot, you're working with a Kabbalistic form. And there, the root of meaning, the reason for the existence of astrology, the reason for the use of the planets and the signs and all the rest of the paraphernalia of the astrological symbolism, the root of that is mysticism and philosophy. There, the point is to describe how the world came into being and the way in which a human being should stand, should be ordered, should be organized, and how a human being is appropriate in the face of the universe. There is a description of what the universe is made of and how it came into being and what its purposes are. And the same exact thing that can be said of the universe can also be said of a human being who is understood in Kabbalistic terms as being essentially a small universe, a mirror of the great universe. And so whatever can be said of a creative process as a whole can be said of a human being in particular. And those are the differences between the root systems and purposes of Kabbalistic astrology and Western astrology. There is a place where they overlap. One of the uses that can be found for both of them, and that use is particularly useful in tarot, is a matter of timing. When will something happen? After you've determined what will happen, the big question is, well, when? When will it happen? How will it happen? In what order will things happen? Those things can be applied from either the Western or the Kabbalistic point of view. And that's its major use for us tonight, I think. It's one of the big questions of tarot, certainly in divination practice. When will something happen? And we're going to be describing how you can find that out by the use of the cards, because every single card in tarot has an astrological attribution. What I want to do, actually, to begin with, is I would like to have you take out the sheets that you downloaded to attend this class, and they form a little book. They form a book of forms that will help to describe the relationship of astrology to the majors. And the very first one of those is a list. And it's a list of cards, and it goes from the Fool to the Magician, etc. And it's just a list of 22 cards, and next to each card is a blank space. And that blank space is reserved for the astrological attribution that goes with that card, and it's standard. It's one that we all use. And what I would like you to do at this point is I would like you to take that list, and I would like you to fill it in as much as you can. It may be that you know all the astrological attributions. It may be that you know some of them, and it may be that you don't know any of them. Do the best you can with it. Take a moment and fill it out. What, as far as you know, is the astrological attribution of the Fool, of the Magician, etc.? Do that now.
If you're stuck on some of them, take a look at the pictures on the card, because some of the pictures actually have clues in the imagery as to what their planetary or zodiacal sign attributions are. Not all of them do. Some of them do, and they're very hidden, and you have to know where to look. But some of them are pretty obvious. So if you're not sure, take a look at the card and see if there may be a clue there.
Okay, it may be that you haven't finished this list yet, but I'm going to let you finish it as we speak. So I'm going to go down the list and find out whether or not you have a good grasp of this and where the blanks might be, and I'll do it with you one at a time. Kel, do you know the astrological attribution for the Fool?
Uranus.
Good. Is there anything else besides that?
I don't know.
Okay, well, Uranus is good. Okay, we're going to leave it at that for the moment. Good. Cynthia, what's the astrological attribution of the Magician?
Mercury.
Good. And Paul?
Yeah.
Of the High Priestess?
The Moon.
Good. David, what about the Empress?
Venus.
Good. Charlotte, do you know the astrological attribution of the Emperor?
No.
Okay. How about you, Maris?
No, I don't.
Okay. Kel, what's the astrological attribution of the Emperor?
Aries.
Good.
Right, that's one that has the stuff on the card. If you look at the picture, you'll see he's got ram's heads all over his throne. So it's a good way of remembering it.
Okay, now I have a general idea of where people are with regard to this. Was there anybody here who doesn't know any of this?
I will be the one who would represent. This is Farrell.
Okay, Farrell.
I only know two of the 21, so
you can
treat me as the Emperor, and I think Death is Scorpio, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Let me go over the list. I just wanted to get a general idea of where people were and how comfortable and familiar they were. I think this group is pretty sophisticated, but I'm going to go over the list for the sake of the recording and also to fill in the blanks for those people who are less familiar with it, a couple of people who know a little bit less. To begin with, we have the Fool. And as it was already mentioned, Uranus is the astrological attribution of the Fool. The Magician is Mercury. The High Priestess is the Moon. The Empress is Venus. The Emperor is Aries. The Hierophant is Taurus. The Lovers is Gemini. The Chariot is Cancer. Strength is Leo. The Hermit is Virgo. The Wheel is Jupiter. Justice is Libra. And then we get to the Hangman, whose modern astrological attribution is Neptune. Death is Scorpio. Temperance is Sagittarius. The Devil is Capricorn. The Tower is Mars. The Star is Aquarius. The Moon is Pisces. And the Sun is the Sun. Judgment's modern astrological attribution is Pluto, and the world is Saturn. So there we have all 10 of the planets and all 12 of the signs constituting together the 22 cards of the major arcana. Now I should interject something, and you guys can comment on this if you would like, because I think it may be something of an issue for some people. You know that in tarot there's a whole bunch of attribution systems, and people are not universally accepting of what we just said. It's pretty much widespread in the circles that we run in. It's a Golden Dawn attribution, and more than that, it is particularly the attribution that goes with the weight deck, and most of the English-speaking world will use this attribution system even if they don't use the weight deck. The notable exception to it is the Toth deck, and the Toth deck is the brainchild of Aleister Crowley, who is a contemporary of Waite's, and of course, they both belong to the Golden Dawn. And Crowley, for reasons of his own, changed things around a bit. Also, the astrological attributions that come out of the European systems, not the English, but the French and the Italian systems, they work slightly differently also. So be aware that this is not universal, but it is pretty solidly founded, and you're going to find out why. Not all of them are equally well-founded. Not all of them have the same authority behind them. And you're going to find that there are some forms of authority that are more authoritative than others. It's kind of odd to say that, but I think you'll probably find that to be true. That'll be a judgment call that you guys will have to make, each one in your own way. So does anybody here find that they work with a system other than the one I just gave? Or is that pretty much comfortable for everybody?
Occasionally, yes.
Sometimes I will just use air for the fool and water for the hanged man. And I'm still up in the air about Pluto and judgment. I mean, they go well, but with the Trans-Saturnians, sometimes I use them, sometimes I don't.
Good point. That's another issue altogether. And I need to bring that up right now because it's going to turn us right on to the systems that we're about to use. Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are planets that cannot be seen with the naked eye. They were discovered with the onset of the telescope. They were discovered fairly late. I believe the first of those was discovered in the late 19th century and then the others after that. It does happen to fit rather nicely. The Greek god attributions of those three planets work really rather nicely inside of Western astrology. They do not, however, have any place in the astrology of Tarot. In Kabbalistic astrology, the universe was created with seven planets that match the 7 days of creation that were described in Genesis. So the point, the purpose of Kabbalah is to describe the creation of the world and the way the world is organized in the symbol system of the Old Testament. We're looking at a biblical as compared to a Greek description of creation. The modern version will eventually have to deal with either the declassification of Pluto as a planet or the subsequent classification of many other rocks in the sky as being planets that are not presently there. That will change with time. The system that Kabbalah works with will not change. The planets that you can see with the naked eye will not change. From that point of view, the system is quite stable and will never have to be revised. So one of the things you should be aware of here is that the really powerful root of the astrology of Tarot can be found in the descriptions of creation that can be found in the Old Testament. That's the root authority for the astrology of Tarot. Kind of hard to get any more root than that. But anyway, that's what we use. It doesn't mean that everybody agrees with that, but it does mean that that's where we're coming from here. And part of the point of what we're doing is so that you should be able to see where these attributions come from. One of the problems that we have with esotericism is that oftentimes the information is given to us in the form of dry lists. There are endless numbers of lists of attributions, and between them all, they create meaning for us in tarot. But a lot of times we have the list, but not the reasoning behind the list. We don't know where it comes from. We don't know why these things are said. So this class, in part, is aimed at filling in the gaps of why. Where does this stuff come from and why is it there? And then you're really going to see the reasoning behind it and you'll find that it stands up extraordinarily well. If you want to, now would be a good time to revise the list that you just made a slight amount. Don't cross anything out, but look at the Fool and where just a moment ago you had written in Uranus for the Fool, right next to that, put an air. The Fool's astrological attribution is elemental. The planet is used in modern tarot astrology, but it is not part of the system that we're discussing. Then if you go to the hangman, you will find that the official astrological attribution of the hangman inside of the esoteric system is water. As you can see, Neptune being the god of the sea, it works perfectly well with water. And as you know, Uranus has a quality, an electrical quality that goes very well with the qualities of air. And Pluto, which is the planet assigned to judgment, actually the astrological attribution is the element of fire. And fire, of course, and judgment have a considerable amount to do with each other. So now, with the adding of the elements, you have the complete list of the astrological attributions. The question is, why these? Why are these cards associated with these particular planets and signs and elements? Why? Where does it come from? So the next thing I want you to do is I would like you to take a look at the next form in the group of forms that you have, which is called the Hebrew alphabet. We're not going to write anything in there, but I would like you to look at the alphabet and realize that you're looking at a major portion of Jewish mysticism when you look at this alphabet. You're looking at a major portion of the biblical understanding of how the world was created, what the basic architectural elements of creation were. This alphabet is like that. Probably you're familiar with the idea that there are in the world any number of what are called sacred alphabets. Every country, let's say, every civilization that has been the founder of a particular major religion will usually associate its alphabet with that spirituality. So, for example, Sanskrit is the alphabet associated with the Hindu pantheon and yoga. The Gaelic alphabet, the Gaelic language, I believe, is actually a language sacred to the gods of Ireland and the Celts. Latin and Greek are clearly holy languages with regard to Christianity. Arabic and its alphabet has a holy language and a holy alphabet with regard to Islam. There may be others as well. And Hebrew is certainly like that with Judaism. The alphabets in each of these cases make a great deal of difference, and they have symbolic meaning. They're not just signs or symbols of pronunciation the way they are in English. So what you're looking at here are the structural elements, the building blocks of creation in these 22 letters. This is something that we've talked about a little bit in other series, but I'm going to go over it with you now in a little bit more detail. When you look at this alphabet, what you can see, even if you're unfamiliar with it, even if you've never seen it before, you can see pretty quickly that there are a total of 22 letters. The Hebrew alphabet has 22 letters, neither more nor less. There are some letters here that have different forms of being written that are called final forms, but for all intents and purposes, the letters are the same. 22. And of course, you know that there are 22 major arcana in the tarot, and you can easily see that there's a correspondence that is possible there. There are also three elements, seven planets, and 12 signs. 3, 7, and 12 add up to 22. And so that you can see, it wouldn't be a big stretch to be able to associate one of the astrological attributions with each of the letters of the alphabet and each one of the major arcana. And that is the root of our attribution system here. Is that actually a novel idea for anybody? Is this something that anybody here is unfamiliar with as an idea?
Yeah, I'm unfamiliar with it. This is Farrell.
Okay.
I'm going to represent the people who know nothing, okay?
That sounds like a plan. Good for you. You are a designated representative. Excellent. That's good. Now, let me ask Charlotte, are you familiar at all with this stuff?
Somewhat. Not fully. More elements than the planets and all that.
Okay.
Like earth, fire, water, and air than the planet stuff.
Okay. By the way, earth is not represented here, and the reason for that is because in this system, air, fire, and water are said to combine to create
right.
Earth.
Okay.
Earth is considered to be a compound and not original element.
That I did not know.
Okay, you're going to find that out in a little while. And it's actually, some of the things we're going to say here are going to help to explain some basic Kabbalah that some of you may have and some of you may be missing. While we're doing the alphabet and while we're doing the astrology, you'll learn some other things as well that may be useful in other ways. All right. The next thing I want you to notice about this alphabet is that there are no particular divisions. It just goes from the upper right to the lower left. Hebrew is read from right to left, unlike English, which is read from left to right. So the very first letter of the alphabet is Aleph, and it marches across the page to the left, and then it starts the second column with Vav, and marches across the column from right to left, etc. And the last letter of the alphabet is Tav. So if you go back and forth from the rows, you'll see that the letters go in numerical order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc., all the way down to the 22nd letter. There do not seem to be on this page any intrinsic divisions. It's a linear array, a linear development, just like the alphabet in English runs from A to Z with no particular divisions in between. But that is an illusion. There are indeed divisions here, and the divisions are very important. Partly they're important because they explain the way the world is created. Partly they're important because they explain a good chunk of Kabbalah. And lastly, they're important because they're going to explain in that order how the astrology of tarot came to be the way it is and why the given cards that we have are associated with particular astrological attributions. That's what's going to happen now. So look at these letters. Get a sense of what they're like. Get a sense of what they're called. Take a moment to just kind of scan them. If you don't already know them by heart, and some of you will and some of you won't, take a look at what they look like and what they sound like. I'm going to read them off so that the pronunciation of the letter is clear. Many people will look at transliterations of foreign languages and not be quite sure what they're looking at. So let me give you those pronunciations. The first letter is Aleph. The second letter is Bet. And the TH is pronounced like a hard T. Gimel. Dalet. Hey. Vav, Zion, Chet. Now that CH is pronounced like a guttural H or a guttural K, the kind of sound that you will find in German and in Scotch dialect. Ch. So it's Chet. Then Tet. Yod. Kaf. Lamed. Mem. Nun. Samek. Ayin. Pei. Sadi. Kof, Resh, Shin, Tav. Those are the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Now I'm going to begin to elucidate a little bit, to show you what that's made of and what the significance of those things actually are. And it's kind of interesting to see. So what I would like you to do now is I would like you to go to the next form that we have available to us, which shows you the mother letters and the double letters. So take those out. You're going to find that the alphabet divides itself into three parts. Parts correspond to the organization of 3, 7, and 12. So let me begin by giving you the attributions of the mother letters. The mother letters are three. The first of the mother letters is Aleph. And Aleph has the elemental attribution of air. Mem has the attribution of water. And Shin has the attribution of fire. So if you'd be kind enough to write those in on the blank lines that are next to those letters, that would be good. Air, water, and fire. Aleph, Mem, and Shin. These are called the mother letters. And out of these, it is said, the whole universe derives. The cards that are associated with these three letters and with these three elements are as follows. Aleph and the element of air are the fool. So write the name of the fool on the line next to Aleph and air. Mem and water are associated with the hangman. So write the hangman underneath the fool. Shin and fire are associated with judgment. So write in judgment. Those three cards are associated with the three elements from which the entire world is said to be made, and they're called mother letters. I'm going to tell you a little bit about them because it's important that you understand this. The mother letters are principles in addition to elements. It's said that there is a way in which you can say something. There's a way in which you can say its opposite. And there is a way you can reconcile them. So a thing, its opposite, and its resolution are contained in those three letters. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, one of the primary principles of any philosophical discourse. It's said that air is the middle road. It's the synthesis between opposites. It's said that shin, fire, is the thesis, the basic principle, whatever it is that you can say about anything. And it's said that mem, water, is the antithesis of that. Fire and water are seen as thesis and antithesis, and air is the mediator between them. Be aware of that. So when you see any of the cards that are associated with these things arise in a reading, be aware of that by itself, leaving aside the elemental qualities. Shin is that which you can say about anything. Mem is the opposite of that. And fool is the synthesis between them. Fool is the resolution of opposites. And the world, as you know, is made of pairs of opposites and their resolution. That's the first thing you should know about the mother letters, and there's more that we'll get to later. There are going to be blanks that you won't hear about while we're talking about a particular aspect of something, so don't get ahead of yourselves. Only write stuff when I give them to you to write. All of these blanks are going to be filled in by the time we're done.
Well,
yes.
Cynthia, one of my favorite three card readings is thesis, antithesis, synthesis.
So there you have it.
I mean, that's
show
like
you
my standby.
Okay. The next thing we're going to have to do is work with the double letters. This is all, by the way, going to turn into a visual soon enough. But right now, they're just lists of things, just like the lists you're used to seeing that the metaphysical world is made of, especially the esoteric world. They give you lists and lists and lists, and here's another set of lists. But it's good to have, because partially you're going to get some explanations with it. And then in a little while, I'm going to show you what it looks like. These things are not just lists. They're actually visuals that make a lot of sense. But the double letters now go as follows. Bet, the first double letter, has the astrological attribution of Mercury, and the card is the Magician. So fill those in that way. Gimel has the astrological attribution of the Moon, and she's the High Priestess. Dalet has the astrological attribution of Venus and the card attribution of the Empress. When I say that, that basically means that in tarot, the Empress is Venus, and Venus is Dalet, and Dalet is a double letter. That's basically what we're doing. We're working our way backwards from the card all the way to one of the building blocks of the universe. And you're going to see how all of that comes together in a little bit. Kaf is Jupiter. Jupiter is the wheel. Pei is Mars and the tower. Resh is the sun and also the sun, the card, the sun. And Tav is Saturn and the world. So those are the seven double letters and the attributions of those letters in cards and in astrology. By the way, you will probably notice, if you take a look at it, if you haven't already noticed it, that these double letters have the astrological attribution of the seven planets. All the planets are double letters, and I want to tell you what a double letter is. In Hebrew, there are some letters, just seven of them, that have two pronunciations each. Just as in English, let's say the letter C can be pronounced as an S or a K, depending on the grammar that's required, so these letters also have two pronunciations each. It's not really necessary for our purposes that you know what those pronunciations are, but I'll give them to you quickly. Bet obviously has the sound of an English B, and it does have that. Its other pronunciation is a V. Gimel has the obvious pronunciation of G, and it also has the soft pronunciation of J. Dalet is D, and it has the additional pronunciation of a hard TH, as in the. Kaf has the pronunciation of K, and it also has the pronunciation of the guttural K, ch, which has a transliteration of CH. Pei has the pronunciation of P, and also in its soft form, F. Resh has this pronunciation of R, and its second pronunciation, its double pronunciation, has actually been lost in time. How they originally pronounced it in ancient days, nobody anymore knows. And Tav has a pronunciation of T, and in some dialects, it has the additional pronunciation of S, as in Sam, and occasionally, in some places, of the soft TH, as in thing, th. Those are the pronunciations, although in modern Hebrew, you have some of them that are still used and some that are not. Bet, kaf, and pei are used with both pronunciations. All the other double pronunciations have lapsed into disuse. But for metaphysical purposes, those doubles are very, very important. And you're going to see how that works in a little bit. And those double pronunciation letters are the planets. So we've done three mother letters. By the way, those mother letters all have singular pronunciations, and these have doubles. So we've done three and seven, and now we get to the 12. So if you now go to the next page of our forms, you'll see a page that's listed the single letters. And there are 12. The simple letters are 12, and they are letters all of which have a single pronunciation. The first of these is He. Its astrological attribution is Aries, and the card associated with that is the Emperor. The second simple letter is Vav, whose astrological attribution is Taurus, and whose card is the Hierophant. Next is Zion, Gemini, and the Lovers. Then is Chet, Cancer, the Chariot. Then there's Tet, Leo, and Strength. Then we have Yod, Virgo, and the Hermit. Lamed, Libra, and Justice. Nun, Scorpio, and Death. Next is Samek, Sagittarius, and Temperance. Ion is Capricorn, and the Devil. Sadi is Aquarius, and the Star. And Pisces is Kaf, and the Moon. I should have said it the other way around. Kaf is Pisces and the Moon. An interesting story hangs around Sadi and the Star. I won't tell you the whole story, but I should let you know that this is where Aleister Crowley, among the Golden Dawn original protagonists, began to differ from his colleagues. Apparently, Aleister Crowley, who was understood to be something of an egocentric type, a person who was very flamboyant and had a very strong and high opinion of himself. Actually, all of them had a very strong and high opinion of themselves, but I guess with Crowley it took on a more colorful flavor than with most of them. In any case, one day, apparently, Crowley had a dream. This is making a long story very short, but he had a dream, and in the dream, some figure or being came to him and said, "Sadi is not the Star." And he woke up remembering that, and he took his dream very seriously because he took himself very seriously. And he decided to reorder the order of the majors and the astrological order according to that. He didn't know what the Star was supposed to be, but he knew it wasn't Sadi because his dream told him so. And so he rearranged things. I'm not going to tell you what his rearrangement was, but he did rearrange things and come up with another attribution, which meant that two things had to change, the Star and one other card, which he switched it with. So he has a somewhat different system, and that difference in system was based on his own personal inner experience. The order that I'm giving you now, the astrological order that goes with these letters, never mind the cards, because the cards came later, but the astrological attribution of these singles, doubles, and mother letters, those come from the Sefer Yetzirah, one of the oldest books upon which Kabbalah is based. It's at least 1,000 years old in its written form and probably considerably older than that in its oral form. So the attribution of the planets, the signs, and the elements to the letters is pretty rock solid. And the Golden Dawn got their attribution straight out of the Sefer Yetzirah. Later on, the cards were added to this list of attributions. And the Hebrew Kabbalah knew nothing of tarot, could have cared less about tarot, and in fact would probably have, and still to this day would, not allow tarot any part of their universe because the use of images to describe anything holy was strictly forbidden, and so tarot would not have been part of their system. However, eventually, tarot was inducted into the system, and then those images were added to the letter and astrological attributions in a certain way, and we'll talk about that in a little while. One of the things, by the way, that has been something of a question as to the order of strength and justice, 8 and 11. In the older systems of tarot coming out of Europe, the images were so arranged that justice came first and in the 8th position, and strength came in the 11th position. And that was something that had been prevalent for a long time. And there were ways in which that was understood that seemed to make it make sense in the esoteric universe. Because remember, initially, tarot was a deck of playing cards. And the order was initially a playing card order. So in a way, it didn't really make too much difference, I don't think, from a playing card standpoint, which one came first, although there was perhaps a symbolic order that came out of the organization of virtues, civic and private, that were associated with these images that came out of the Renaissance. But that was a cultural thing peculiar to the West. In terms of what tarot became, which was an esoteric instrument, everything was again referred back to the Kabbalistic system. And in the Kabbalistic system, the order of the letters and the order of the astrological signs and planets, etc., that was set a long time ago before tarot ever showed up on the scene. So when the cards were attributed, it became clear that justice could not possibly represent Leo, and strength could not possibly represent Libra. And they were switched, and they made perfect sense to switch.
If you got really into some of the Hebrew words and meanings, you can actually make a case to do that.
Well, let me say this. In biblical interpretation and in esotericism, you can twist anything to mean anything you like. You can take something and turn it by degrees into its opposite, and nobody could argue with you. It is possible to do, and I know that it's done, but in the obvious, clear-cut, straightforward, direct use of images, you tell me how the image on the cards that we're used to using, especially in the weight deck, can have strength represent Libra. Show me.
Balance
has nothing to do with it. Balance is a matter of a balance, which means literally scales. Libra is the scales in astrology. It is not a lion and a woman. Every card in tarot has balance in it.
I won't get into a big argument, but I've actually worked it out both ways.
I'm not saying it can't be worked out, but obviously for anybody simply looking at this with a clear and simple, straightforward eye and working intuitively, there's no question that Leo, the lion, belongs with strength, which has a lion in it, and Libra, the scales, belongs with justice, which has scales in it. I mean, it would seem fairly straightforward and simple, and to do it the opposite way would be begging for trouble. And you'd have to get so esoteric in order to understand that, that it would be silly. Nothing is gained thereby that I can tell.
Well,
I think probably,
this is Cynthia. If you switch Leo to Lamed and Libra to Tet, then it might work. But is there a reason for the order to go or? Oh, that's right, because of the seasons and the months.
Exactly. This is not something that's arbitrary.
Okay, gotcha. No, I don't get it. I don't get how it could be any other way.
Well, yeah, I know,
Sorry.
But that's another question altogether. Reese is right. For those people who start out with the intention of having Leo represented by the picture of justice, they could make it happen. And if they wanted to make strength represent Libra, they could make it so. It's just verbal. Pictorially, it doesn't work. Not unless you really make trouble for yourself. So that's one of the points of discussion. But I want you to realize that you cannot accomplish that switch by switching the astrological attribution with a Hebrew letter. That won't work. That is solid as a rock, and nobody argues that.
You'd have to change the imagery.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to be aware of where that particular argument comes from, why it was that the Golden Dawn, not including Crowley, but including the rest of the Golden Dawn, why the Golden Dawn made that particular switch. Be aware that these things are the way they are, because there is a background to it. There is a system behind it. There's a reason for it. And it's very old. And as I said, it is essentially biblical in nature. Okay. Now that you have all of these lists, the question is, how do they look? What do they mean? What do they accomplish? The double letters I mentioned to you already, they have double pronunciations. In other esoteric matters, they have double functions. They are connected with the seven planets and the number seven. And the number seven, by the way, is extremely important in Kabbalistic matters. The holiness and special place that the number seven has is quite extreme. It's not our place to go into it now, but I can just mention that it is. So the seven double letters have a very strong function to play. In astrology, it gives us the planets. And you can see, by the way, since there are only seven double letters, you couldn't have eight planets or 10 planets from a Kabbalistic point of view, no matter how many planets they discover in the sky with telescopes, the order of creation was set a long time ago. And it was set by what could be seen from here by us. By the way, you should be aware, I'm sure you all are, that astrology, unlike astronomy, places human beings at the center of the universe. Instead of a heliocentric universe, a sun-centered universe, we have essentially a geocentric universe. And even more than that, it could be said that we have an egocentric universe. The center of the universe is you. When you do a natal chart, all the planets, all the signs, all the houses, and the whole universe literally revolves around you. You are at the center of it all. Clearly, that is not an objective position. Clearly, science has to reject it because science is based on the purely objective. And from their point of view, this is not true. It's simply not so. From the point of view of consciousness, it is absolutely true. From the point of view of consciousness, the whole universe revolves around each one of us separately. So we're looking, in that sense, at a picture of the universe based on consciousness rather than objective observation. So here we have the seven planets, only seven, and the 12 signs, only 12. All is seen from the Earth where we stand. Obviously, if we were to go off to some other planet in some distant galaxy, none of this would hold. None of this would hold from an astronomical point of view, and yet it would still hold from a personal point of view. So now comes a question of how this looks. How does it actually play out as a visual? Because that's going to make a lot of sense and explain a great deal more. So now take out the next diagram, which is a Tree of Life diagram. And many of you know what the Tree of Life diagram looks like. In fact, it may be that all of you do. Is there anybody here who has never seen a Tree of Life diagram before and doesn't know what it looks like? Okay, I'm going to assume that that silence means that all of you have at least seen this, which is kind of interesting because there was a time not all that long ago when the Tree of Life diagram was really esoteric and very few people knew what it was. Nowadays, I guess everybody in tarot is pretty familiar with it. And the reason is because this, in addition to the Hebrew alphabet, is the second symbol system, which defines almost all of esotericism. And certainly it defines astrology and tarot. And I'm going to show you how. So what I'm going to have you do now is I'm going to have you draw some lines. And I'm going to show you the reason why those lines are there and what they accomplish. The first thing I want you to do, you'll see that all of the 10 circles are numbered 1 through 10. The circles have a name. I'll give that name to you now because there's no point in calling these things circles. If you're working with a Tree of Life diagram, you should at least know their names. The circles are called sephirot. Each one is called a sephira, spelled S-E-P-H-I-R-A-H. The plural of that is sephirot, and it has an O-T-H on the end. S-E-P-H-I-R-O-T-H, and it's pronounced that way. The accent is on the last syllable, sephira and sephirot. We'll use that for the moment. There are other pronunciations, but that's the primary one. So what I want you to do now is I want you to begin to draw lines that are going to link these apparently unlinked sephirot together in various patterns. So you're going to draw a straight line between the number 2 and the number 3. And then you're going to draw another straight line, a horizontal line, between 4 and 5. And then a final straight line between 7 and 8. And you'll see that when you have these three lines in place, what you have done is you have linked the right side of the Tree of Life with the left side. You'll see that actually the ends of these three lines constitute a column of sephirot on the right and another column on the left. They're the extremes of left and right. They're understood to be the extremes of thesis and antithesis, of a thing and its opposite, the left and the right hand of everything. The three lines that you have just drawn are the three paths that connect the opposites, and those paths are the mother letters. The function of the mother letters is to connect opposites, all the opposites in the universe. And I'll tell you which line is which letter. The top line, between 2 and 3, is fire. I'm going to give you the elemental attribution because it's easiest. Fire is Shin and judgment. That's the very first link between left and right, the thesis, the main argument, the main statement. The line between 7 and 8 is water, Mem, the hangman. That is the line of antithesis. It's the opposite. Water and fire are opposites. And yet each one of those binds together the left and the right side. The middle line, the one that mediates between the opposites, is air and the fool. And so I want you to understand that these three letters, these three elements, bind together things that would normally fly apart. Thesis and antithesis, and even synthesis, would not maintain themselves. They would not be able to remain inside of the same structure unless they were linked and held. The tree of life would fall apart. Its left and its right side would disappear. Each one would go off into its own universe, and they would never be seen together again, were it not for the binding quality of the mother letters. Now you have an idea, if you didn't have before, of the importance of those three cards, the Fool, the Hangman, and Judgment. That's the function that they perform. And as you can see, it's quite different than Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. It doesn't have anything to do with human archetypes. It doesn't have very much to do with circumstances and the progression of events. What it talks about is the way in which the world is held together. And by the way, you are that world. The picture of the Tree of Life is a picture of creation and the order of creation. It's also a picture of you and how you were created and how you're maintained. So these three cards are that in you which holds together those things which are opposite in you. That's a whole discussion by itself, and we don't have time enough for all of that, but I'm going to give you that first. Now, by the way, does anybody have any comment on any of that before we go any further? It's a lot to take in, and I'll talk to you about that later if you have any time. It's going to be kind of tough to get all of this into one class. Okay.
I'm sorry, Wald, is air between 7 and 8?
No, air is between 4 and 5.
Thank you.
Yes.
I think this is really very interesting.
I bet you would think so. I know that you would. In fact, this is why I'm doing this, because it really is interesting.
I love it. I'm glad I don't know anything about it.
Well, you don't know anything about it now, because now you do. And you're going to know more before we're done.
Okay.
Next, I'm going to have you draw some vertical lines. First, I want you to draw a vertical line between the number 2 and the number 4. And then draw another vertical line between 4 and 7. Then I want you to draw a vertical line between 3 and 5. And another vertical line between 5 and 8. And there you see the two columns, the right column and the left column, which form the opposites that make up the Tree of Life. Now I want you to draw a long vertical line between 1 and 6, right through the middle of the tree. There is, as you can see, a light circle that is not one of the 10 numbers. We'll talk about that later. This vertical line is going to go right through the middle of that. Then draw a vertical line between 6 and 9, and finally between 9 and 10. If you count the number of vertical lines that you just drew, you'll find that there are 7 of them. These are the 7 planets. Okay? And I'm going to tell you what they are. The line between 1 and 6, we're going to go down the middle first, is Mercury, and that's the magician. So what you can do is use the astrological sign and write it alongside that line. If you know the astrological sign, it's the easiest way to write it. Or you can just write Mercury, or you can write the magician. Any of those three. If you start off by writing the astrological sign, make them all astrological signs. If you start off writing the name of the planet, use the names of the planets for all of them. In other words, stay consistent. The line between 2 and 4 is the moon, the High Priestess. The line between 3 and 5 is Venus, the Empress. The line between 4 and 7 is Jupiter, the Wheel of Fortune. The line between 5 and 8 is Mars, the Tower. The line between 6 and 9 is the Sun. And the final line is the line between 9 and 10, and that's Saturn, the world. Now you have all the verticals in place, and I should let you know that the verticals serve almost the same purpose as the horizontals. What they do is they hold the world together. Instead of holding the opposites together, they hold together above and below. They hold together heaven and earth. They hold together everything in you that is high and everything in you that is low. If it were not for this, what is above in you would separate from what is below in you. What is high and holy and pure and spiritual and all the things that we associate with that in the universe would separate from all that is low, physical, and what can be, in alchemical terms, be called gross. The fine would separate from the gross. The high and the low are kept together by the planets. They're a ladder of spiritual qualities that allow you to rise from below to above. Without them, it would not be possible to do that. Not only would it not be possible to do that in a symbolic sense, it wouldn't be possible to do it even in a psychological one. The purpose and point of the planets in this astrology is to bind what is high and what is low inside of you and let each have access to the other. It allows the spiritual to become flesh. It allows matter to become spirit. It allows you to enter the world as a created being, and it allows you to return from this creative world as a spiritual being. That's the function that the planets serve. So now you know the functions, the purpose of the astrology for the magician, the high priestess, the empress, the wheel, the tower, the sun, and the world. That's the first part. Now already, the original Hebrew alphabet that you saw to begin with has already divided itself into its parts. You can no longer view it as a single, simple, linear development of letters. It's a combination of ideas, ideas which have a visual representation which allows you to see the nature of the universe laid out in front of you on a piece of paper. I might mention to you that the mother letters also, since they distinguish between air, fire, and water, they also serve the function of defining the three columns, the right, the left, and the middle column. The pillars, as they're called, are defined in that way elementally. The right-hand pillar is the pillar of fire. So 2, 4, and 7 on the tree of life and the paths that join them are essentially fiery. They're explosive and energetic. The left-hand pillar is water, 3, 5, and 8, and the paths of Venus and Mars, the paths of the Empress and the Tower, which connect them, are watery. Oddly, this is different than what we're used to. Remember that the names of these are Greek to begin with. The Hebrew names are not this way. Therefore, the apparent switch of male and female from masculine to feminine, the right-hand column is, by the way, masculine, the left-hand column, feminine. And the watery side of things is the container. The watery side of the thing is that which damps down and holds and contains the energy of fire. The middle path is air. The middle pillar is air. So 1 is air, 2 is fire, 3 is water, and those 3 form a triad, which becomes very important in Kabbalah, and which, again, has an impact on astrology when you work with it this way. We don't have time to go into all of that. It becomes very complex, but you should be aware that these ideas have many forms. They have lots of permutations and combinations. That takes care of 10 of the 22 letters. Now I'm going to give you the remaining 12, and we'll do it quickly. So if you'll take out the final Tree of Life sheet, what I'm going to do is have you draw some more lines. Before I do, I want you to see that the space in between 1 and 6, the place where there is a lightly drawn circle or Sephira. It isn't actually called a Sephira in Hebrew, but it does have a place on the tree. It's a place that is called knowledge. And its Hebrew name is Daat, spelled D-A-A-T-H. So if you would do this for me, right now, just write the letter, the small letter D. Write a small letter D in that faint half circle in the center, because that's going to play a role in what we do next. I'm not going to try and explain that to you now, because that's Kabbalah and not astrology, but it has a role to play. So I'm going to tell you to draw lines now. The lines we're about to draw are going to be diagonal lines, and I'll tell you how they go. First, draw a line between 1 and 2. Then draw a line between 1 and 3. Then draw a line between 2 and Daat, that center light Sephira. Then draw a line between 3 and Daat. Then draw a line between Daat and 4. And another line between Daat and 5. Now draw a line between 4 and 6. And another one between 5 and 6. Then draw a line between 6 and 7. And between 6 and 8. Finally, draw a line between 7 and 9. And 8 and 9. And these are the single letters. These are the astrological attributions that go with those single letters. We're running a little short of time. Maybe I'll give this to you anyway quickly, so write quickly now. The path between 1 and 2 is Aries. The path between 1 and 3 is Taurus. The path between 2 and Daat is Gemini. The path between 3 and Daat is Cancer. The path between Daat and 4 is Leo. The path between Daat and 5 is Virgo. The path between 4 and 6 is Libra. The path between 5 and 6 is Scorpio. Between 6 and 7 is Sagittarius. Between 6 and 8 is Capricorn. Between 7 and 9 is Aquarius. Between 8 and 9 is Pisces. And there you have all of the simple letters as diagonals, and between them, they lace the tree up tight, and they hold it solid as a rock, and the tree does not wobble.